Hello again, this is Carol Bond, returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 23, 2016. We'll begin this portion of the broadcast with the reading of the obituaries. Dorothy J. Beals, 79, of Bemint, passed away at 2:20 p.m. February 19th at the Kirby Medical Center. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, February 24th at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home, Monticello. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, February 25th, 2016, at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home, with Reverend Jack Root officiating. Interment will be in Bemint Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the American Heart Association, the American Diabetes Association, or the Monticello Faith in Action. Earl K. Halford, 85, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, February 20th, in a Aperion nursing home. Earl was funeral liturgy for Earl Halford will be 11 a.m. Thursday, February 25th, at Morin and Gerbel Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday, before the service at the funeral home. Burial will be in Harristown Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Alzheimer's Association or Wounded Warriors. Alma Grace Swick Harshbarger died of natural causes at her home of 76 years south of Arcola. The family has planned a visitation for Thursday, February 25th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Schrader Funeral Home, 204 North Locust Street, Arcola. The funeral service will be conducted Friday, February 26th, at 11 a.m. at Schrader Funeral Home, with Reverend Don Winch officiating, formerly of the Arcola Presbyterian Church. Burial will follow in the Arcola Township Cemetery, Douglas County. Memorials are suggested to the Arcola Public Library or Donor's Choice. Decatur's Betty K. Humphrey, 68, of De Leon Springs, passed away February 21, 2016, at her residence. A gathering of friends will be held on Friday, February 26th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at Allen Summerhill Funeral Home in DeLand. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the American Cancer Society, Post Office Box 22478, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, 73123. Carrie Calvin Custer, 69, of Decatur, died at 3:39 p.m. on Saturday, February 20th, at home with his family by his side. The family will be hosting a memorial gathering from 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, February 23rd, at Our Lady of the Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Mount Zion. Tanzius Logan Funeral Services and Care is assisting the family with the arrangements. Reverend William A. Palmer, 81, of East Peoria, passed away at 11:30 p.m. Saturday, February 20th, at Fond du Lac Rehab and Health Care Center in East Peoria. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the East Peoria First United Methodist Church or Preacher's Aid Society. Cremation rites have been accorded. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, February 27th at 11 a.m. at the East Peoria First United Methodist Church, with Reverend Mary Arnold officiating. Family will receive friends 1 hour before services from 10 to 11 a.m. on Saturday at the church. Dieter's Funeral Home and Crematory in East Peoria is assisting the family with arrangements. Carrie Wolford, 89, of Springfield, passed over on Tuesday, February 16th at McKinley Court Rehabilitation Center in Decatur, Illinois. Visitation will begin at Pleasant Grove Baptist Church Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016, that is today, at 10 a.m. So that has already happened. Pastor Robert Timms will begin services celebrating her life at 11 a.m. Burial Camp Butler National Cemetery. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service in Springfield. We'll turn back to page 3, where we seem to have missed a few articles. Here's a major one entitled, Schools Sharpen IT Tools. This was written by Valerie Wells, and the dateline is Decatur. Technology in Decatur schools isn't just for the students. Administrators, parents, and teachers depend on it, too. SchoolDude is an app that allows buildings to request information technology or maintenance assistance by filling out a short form and hitting send, which emails it to the right office and streamlines the process. The program has several other components, said Jim Altig, director of IT for Decatur Schools, but those two are the only ones in use in Decatur. We switched to this because of the maintenance feature, Altig said. The old system that we had, they had to send an email with certain information and it rolled into a database. We still do that to some extent. But the difference is they go to the website and write a ticket and we can customize it on our end. Once they submit it, the technicians who are assigned to that building receive the order, and response time has improved. Some IT problems can be fixed remotely, and even if the problem requires an in-person visit, it's taken care of much more quickly. The system also keeps track of details, such as if the same computer breaks down repeatedly, so Altig and his team know that one needs to be repaired. With the advent of one-to-one technology in the district and devices in the hands of every student, having a streamlined way to request help is even more important. Because the iPads and MacBooks are new, they don't anticipate a lot of problems with breakdowns, but those devices are also set up so that if one is lost or stolen, the IT department can locate it and lock it down to keep an unauthorized person from using it. Technology has also allowed the Professional Development Institute to create an e-book to help teachers make the most of those individual devices, said Scott Davidson, Instructional Technology Coordinator. We created this resource to stimulate teachers' imagination to utilize the tools, he said. The e-book doesn't give them lesson plans, he said, because they have their own. Rather, it provides guidance they can use when an instructional coach is busy or unavailable. And the e-book is available in the iBook store, so anyone can use it. And the best part, he said, is that teachers and students can do likewise. The devices and apps would allow students to publish an e-book, too. Now, Decatur has produced a resource that can be utilized in other places. We've taken an opportunity to create a resource that's published to the world in such an easy fashion, he said. The next article on page 3 is also about education. This was written by Valerie Wells, and it's titled When Dinosaurs Ruled the Class. Desmond Carr is the second grade's resident dinosaur expert at Durfee Magnet School. Point to any of the huge creatures in the mural in progress on or the other drawings kids have done and taped to the hallway walls, and Desmond's your man. He can tell you their names and all about them. His favorite is the Suchomimus with a spiky back and a scary set of teeth. He ate fish, Desmond said. He's one of the carnivores. We're doing a dinosaur unit right now, said teacher Ashley Krause. We found out dinosaurs are a huge interest because of all the recent dinosaur movies that have come out. We've been researching dinosaurs and learning about them. Today is our culminating activity. We have a dinosaur dig that we rented from the Children's Museum of Illinois, and we're making fossils. Second graders don't quite grasp the concept of mural yet, she said with a smile, so the artwork is more of a series of related individual pictures than one cohesive work. Their enthusiasm, however, couldn't be higher. Kids reached over each other's heads and worked furiously to get their pictures done in the allotted time before moving to the next station. The dinosaur dig, said teacher Sarah Pritz, comes complete and ready to go, with plastic dinosaurs embedded in plaster. Kids put on safety goggles and used wooden mallets and chisels to discover them, while at another station, other students dug into sand to find shells and brush them off, just like real archaeologists, but with a little more enthusiasm and a little less finesse. In the hall, kids played dinosaur games and worked on the mural. That's me digging up dinosaur bones, said DJ DeBerry, pointing to a crayon drawing of a couple of dinosaurs next to a volcano with the figure of DJ in the background. Dylan Campbell said he and the other kids took a survey about what they wanted to study, and dinosaurs was the number one choice. He wasn't sure he wanted to study dinosaurs until they started, but he's interested now. I never got to do this when I was in second grade, Pritz said, raising her voice over the hammering of young paleontologists pounding plaster in search of artifacts. But I get to do it now. And that was a quotation from the teacher, Sarah Pritz. Also on page 3 is this article from Crimes and Courts by Huey Freeman, headlined Decatur Man on Trial for 2012 Sex Assault After DNA Connects Him to Victim. Dateline Decatur. A 44-year-old woman was walking home from her brother's residence along North Main Street the night of April 3, 2012. She had been drinking and had been in an argument with her sister-in-law. The police were called to intervene. An officer told her she should leave the residence. A tall young man approached from behind and began talking with her. He asked if she was okay. She told him she was upset. He probably walked with me about 10 steps. Then he took my arm and walked me back to a vacant lot. The woman testified Monday at the jury trial of a 21-year-old Donovan Shelby, who is charged with criminal sexual assault for allegedly raping the woman. Shelby was arrested almost 3.5 years after the incident as a result of a DNA match connecting him to the victim. The incident occurred in a church lot just west of Main Street between Marietta and Packard Streets. Shelby was arrested at his home on the 200 block of West Packard Street, about one block from that lot. The DNA match was made after Shelby's DNA was collected on June 18, 2015, when he was convicted of aggravated domestic battery to a child for breaking the upper arm bone of a 2-year-old boy. In her opening statement, Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Kate Kurtz said Shelby was walking along the street, quote, looking for someone who was easy to pick off, end quote. Then the victim came along. Kurtz said she certainly did not consent to him raping her that night. She doesn't know who it is, Kurtz said. She doesn't know this defendant. Assistant Public Defender David Ellison said evidence will show the sex was consensual. Shelby encountered the woman at about midnight. Quoting again the public defendant, they were in agreement to have sex at this time. The victim testified that she was scared as the young man pulled her by her arm toward the alley. He threw her on the ground, pulled down her pants with one hand, while his other hand was around her neck. As he raped her, he ordered her to say that she loved him. She did not respond. When he, quote, aggressively, quote, ordered her once more to tell him she loved him, she complied. He got up and ran down the alley toward Packard Street. She got up and walked home. When her father asked her what was wrong, she told him she had been raped. He called the police. She was taken to a hospital by ambulance where DNA was collected, DNA evidence. As she recalled spending 4 or 5 hours at the hospital, the victim struggled with her emotions. The trial resumes at 9 a.m. today in Macon County Circuit Court. Turning once more to the A3 briefs, we find a couple of more small articles. This is about a Decatur street closure. It's the 1300 block of West Decatur Street between South Fairview and McClellan Avenues. It will be closed to through traffic until 3 p.m. Friday, February 26th. City crews will be repairing a failed water main. The Mount Zion High School Swing Sations finished as first runner-up Saturday during the El Paso Gridley Show Choir Invitational. The Mount Zion Les Femmes group was first runner-up in the single gender division at the same event. The Mount Zion Junior High Sound System took first runner-up Friday in the middle school division at El Paso. And this from Charleston, about a dog death charge. A Lerna man is accused of beating a dog to death, which was reportedly discovered during an investigation of a domestic dispute. Dion Day Nailing is charged with aggravated cruelty to animals, a felony offense, for allegedly beating the dog's head earlier this month. The body of the dog, listed in the charge as a pit bull, was discovered with a mallet in a trash bin in Lerna on February 2nd, according to Detective Christina Stephen of the Coles County Sheriff's Office. Stephen said authorities began investigating the possibility that the dog had been killed after a woman, also reportedly involved in the domestic incident, claimed Nayling killed it. Nayling, 35, was arrested Saturday. He posted $1,500 in bond and was scheduled for his first court appearance next Monday. The charge against Nayling can normally result in a prison sentence of 2 to 5 years with an option for probation with a conviction. We have time today to take a look at what Paul Osborne has to say in his column City Beat in the Decatur Tribune. His headline is, "What Was the School Board Majority Thinking in Informal Decision to Not Extend Superintendent Lisa Taylor's Contract?" A majority of the members of the board of the Decatur School District really stepped in a big pile of craziness last week. 4 of the 7 members unofficially indicated that they will not approve extending District 61 Superintendent Lisa Taylor's contract next year. Taylor's contract expires in June of 2017, and she reportedly met all of the set goals in a recent evaluation. I would call that an A+. Taylor was named superintendent to replace Gloria Davis in 2014, and it was a difficult time for the district. The manner in which Taylor stepped in and created a positive atmosphere came about because of her long commitment to education and working her way up through the school district. She's experienced and highly qualified to continue in that position, and I believe this district is fortunate to have her as a superintendent. The right decision to extend her contract next year should fall under the category of a no-brainer, because it shouldn't take a lot of thought. Taylor came to my office shortly after she was appointed superintendent to talk with me about how she felt regarding the district, and we had a great conversation. I could sense the passion and energy she had for the district at that time. She had a positive message about the students and teachers in the Decatur School District that she wanted to get out. I certainly felt extremely positive and somewhat inspired by her attitude and leadership ability. She was and is a breath of fresh air to the school board, to the school district, and the community. School board members President Sherry Perkins, Alita Graham, B.A. Butts, and T.J. Jackson constitute the majority of the board against extending her contract. Board members who have publicly made comments about the great job that Taylor has done are Brian Hodges, Dan Oakes, and Fred Spanos. Many teachers, community leaders, and others came forward at Tuesday night's school board meeting in McCarthy's auditorium to speak on behalf of keeping Superintendent Taylor. "I have never seen that kind of positive response to a school superintendent in Decatur in all of the years I have been an editor. I would hope by the time you read this column," and we're reading it a week later, "there has been a change of heart by at least one or all of the 4 members of the school board presently opposed to renewing her contract, to change his or her mind before any formal public vote is taken on Taylor's contract extension." Finally, here's a letter to a columnist named Carolyn Hex, who also gave us advice. "Dear Carolyn, I now live in a party destination, and I regularly get family and friends visiting to experience the city. This includes Kathy, who has been in a long-term relationship for 7 years. When we were out, I came back from the bar to find Kathy making out with a guy who was rounding third base. I hated that she made me an accomplice to her cheating and ended up mostly breaking off the friendship. Now, 2 years later, mostly reconciled, Kathy confronted me drunkenly at a birthday party for, quote, treating her like a whore and, quote, making her feel bad for what she did. It all came out that Kathy and her boyfriend had made their relationship open before her trip. I think she needed to tell me about the new situation, or what else was I supposed to think? Kathy maintains her relationship status is private, and she did not need to tell me who's right in this situation, and signed friend. Certainly, it would have helped to know she wasn't deceiving her boyfriend, so you didn't feel like an accomplice. Her claiming privacy after she took part in a public mauling is also a bit rich. I could argue that your reaction sounds like a judge and shun operation, where, assuming you have a good friendship history with Kathy, a sober next day conversation and forgiveness might have been more appropriate to that history. All that being said, what bugs me most about Kathy did, but what she did, isn't even here except by implication. Now that you're in Sin City, you're expected to be the host of everyone's walk on the wild side? Kathy used you, and that's not erased by the I-had-to-get-out-of-jail-free card excuse. Having people come experience the city will wear you down fast if you don't start having a conversation with people in advance about what it's like to be the chauffeur for everyone's regression fantasy. And actually, this is a reply back from the original writer. Kathy spent, and it's addressed to Carolyn, Kathy spent most of the trip blackout drunk and living out her Sin City fantasies. So like you suggested, there were other reasons I didn't want to continue the friendship. I felt used and she didn't understand why. Now I have the talk with people before they come, but don't judge them for a night of indulgence. I tried talking to Kathy about what happened, but she mostly didn't. Denied and was upset with me. I thought it better to just let it and her go. And Carolyn's final comment is, what's obnoxious in Sid City stays obnoxious. Finally, there are blood drives going on today at the Red Cross Blood Donation Center in Decatur, and also from 12:30 to 5:30 at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, Decatur, and from 2:30 to 6:30 at the United Methodist Church in Mount Zion, where they both places would like you to call for an appointment. There will be blood pressure screenings by Lincoln Land Home Care, 11 a.m. to noon at the Kugel Apartments in Charleston. Well, this has been Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald Review and the Decatur Tribune, dated February 23, 2016. It's been a pleasure to read with you, and I look forward to reading with you again next week. Thanks.